Good morning to all of you. I'm turning my Bible to Genesis chapter 39. I want to invite you to get out your Bibles. Let's turn back to that passage that we've been reading. There are two passages that we've had in our scripture reading this morning, one in Genesis 39 and the other in 2 Samuel chapter 11. If you just want to mark those places now, that we'll be coming back to those often throughout our lesson. It's great to be with you. I want to express my appreciation to all the men who lead us in our worship together. It requires thought and some diligence in doing that. I want to express appreciation to Chris for leading us this morning. This was the first time Chris has been leading singing in quite a while, and he was a little concerned about that. And Chris, I wasn't really worried about getting things out of line. I've been here for over a year, and I still don't know for sure what comes next. So I wouldn't worry about that. But I appreciate so much our singing together this morning and the unity we've had together, the wonderful thoughts that have been shared in the prayers and the thoughtful readings. And all of that means so much. I appreciate Wilburn's words this morning as we partook of the Lord's Supper. I think too often it can become a regular practice that after a while is mundane and doesn't maybe hold the meaning that it once did. And he gave us a thought today that I thought was powerful, that we've been invited to feast with the Lord. We've been invited to sit with him. And that should never get old. It just really shouldn't. That we should have such an opportunity and a privilege. I know when I'm invited to someone's home, I don't like to turn that down. If there's a conflict, maybe that has to happen. But I really don't like to, and the Lord has invited us to his table, and I'm so glad we can be there, because we don't have a right to be. So it's been good to be able to engage in this worship, and I hope for you it's been as well. We've read two stories this morning, one about a man named Joseph, another about a man named David, and both of these stories involve temptation. There was temptation to both of these men, very similar temptation to both of these men. And the thing is, these stories are about people who, like us, are very concerned about serving the Lord. And yet, they find themselves in situations in which they are tempted to not do so, maybe even pressured to not do so. And while these stories are strikingly familiar or strikingly similar in many ways, they're also fundamentally different. They both have similarities, and both have differences. And they offer those offer us some, I think, powerful insights into our ongoing battle with Satan. Now, what these men faced in both their temptation as well as how they handled temptation, I think is very, very similar to how we look at temptation and handle temptation in our lives. They had a lot of similarities between them, but of course, as we come to the end of each story, there are two stark differences in those two stories. And what I'd like to do this morning is I'd like to look at those. I'd like to look at the similarities between these two men. And then at the end, look at the stark differences and why those differences took place. And so let's consider some similarities between these two men. What we first of all find is that both of these men are very spiritual men. Joseph and David were both very spiritual men. They were men who wanted to serve God. We look at Joseph in Genesis chapter 39 and we see this moment in his life. You think of all that he's had to deal with. He's had the dysfunctionality of his family. We see his brothers taking him and hating him, selling him into, or putting him in a pit, thinking about killing him, selling him into slavery, him going, have to go down to Egypt and really become a slave while he is there. He's been taken far away from his home. Mom and dad aren't around. Brothers aren't around. Friends are not around. He's in an area, a geographical area, where nobody speaks his language, and nobody has lived by his culture, and it is completely different. You and I have a hard time imagining that. If you have been to a foreign country, Canada doesn't count, that in which you have gone, in which there has been a different culture and a different language, you can understand how the experience of how challenging that is. And that's exactly where Joseph was. And I'll tell you, in a situation like that, that not only he wasn't there as a tourist, it wasn't like he was there to see the great pyramids of Egypt, he was there as a slave. And I'll tell you, if you get to that point, it's easy to begin to blame your situation on God. And to use this perceived neglect from God as an excuse to do whatever you want to. I mean, you think about what Joseph could have said. Mom and dad aren't here. The brothers aren't here. My friends aren't here. Nobody is here really to tell me what I need to do. Hey, I'm going to live any way I want to. I'm going to do whatever I want to. Obviously, God has abandoned me. He's pushed me in the situation, even though I've tried to serve him and do what is right. He's brought me into this situation, and he's kind of abandoned me. I'm just going to do whatever I want, whatever is convenient, whatever works, whatever is leads to success. And yet what we find in this story is that when he was propositioned by Potiphar's wife, that Joseph's love for God and his commitment to God caused him to serve him in this situation. And we see the evidence of that in a very powerful way. That Joseph was a deep spiritual man who loved God, served God, believed in God, not just that, but believed in God's promises. We see that really at the end of Joseph's story, where he tells his brothers, hey, this all happened to preserve you, to preserve the family, and he even says at the end of his life, hey, keep my bones in the coffin, because eventually you guys are going to go back to Canaan, and I want you to take me with you. His faith was immense in God throughout his life. He was a deep spiritual man. And I'll tell you, so was David. So was David. David was a man devoted to God. In 1 Samuel chapter 13 and verse 14, he's recalled as a man after God's own heart. He pursued the heart of God. He wanted the heart of God. He wanted his heart to be like God's heart. And we see that. And I'll tell you, what really shows the spirituality of David is his Psalms. When you read the Psalms of David, you can see the intimate relationship that David wanted and had with God. You can also see it in David's actions, that David was a man who believed in God, especially when we see that when he went out to fight Goliath. That when he went out to fight Goliath, he made it clear to Goliath, listen, I'm not here in my own strength. I'm here in the strength of the Lord, and it'll be this day that God will feed you to the birds. And he believed in that. That you cannot blaspheme the people of God and think that he won't execute justice on you. And he says, I'm here to do that. David, like Joseph, was a deep spiritual man. David was a man who wanted to build a house for the Lord. He put together all the plans for God's house. And God wouldn't let him build it because he said, you're a man of bloodshed, and I don't want that kind of man building. I want your son to build it. But David was a man who loved God. And here's my point in that. You can't attribute the different outcomes of these stories because these two men had two different characters. It's not as though Joseph was a godly man and David was an evil man. Both were good men. Both served the Lord. Both had strong faith. Both had an intimate relationship with God. And I'll tell you, that's a warning for all of us, that being a godly person may help us avoid some temptations, but it does not immune us from temptation. Being a deep spiritual individual who loves God doesn't mean you're never going to be tempted. I'll tell you, it'd be nice if that was the case. It'd be nice if we came up out of the waters of baptism and God just put this shield around us and said, Satan, don't mess with him. But that's not the case. If anything, we become a focus target of Satan. And so all of us must battle the temptation. We need to be realistic about that, and we need to be ready for the challenge of that. These two men were deeply spiritual men, and yet both of them faced a very similar temptation. And both men were very strong. Joseph's strength was demonstrated in this story in Genesis chapter 39. You consider the strength it took to resist this temptation. I mean, this young man was just that. He was a young man. All the desires and feelings that a young man would have, he would have had. And in essence, you have a woman offering herself to this young man. And I'll tell you, that would have been a great temptation. It would have been hard for him to say no. Especially again, no answer. He doesn't have to answer to mom or dad or, or friends or elders in the church or other brethren. He doesn't have to answer any of them. It had been very easy to give in, especially a woman with this sort of power. And thing is, it wasn't that he had to just say no once. As we read here in Genesis 39, it was day after day after day after day. And I tell you, I don't know about you, but eventually stuff like that begins to wear down. And you begin to think in your mind, let's see, you know, is it really worth it? Is it really worth resisting? Maybe I should just give in and enjoy the gratification. He was a man of strong faith and strong will. And so was David. I think of David's faith in his younger years when he went toe-to-toe with the Philistine, the giant, Goliath. All the soldiers of Israel and all of their strength ran from Goliath. And here was a young man, not skilled in the ways of war, that was willing to have the faith to endure that and to face that challenge. Look, if you will, mark yourself there in Genesis 39. Go over to 1 Samuel chapter 17 just for a moment. 1 Samuel chapter 17, and listen to the words of David as he talks to Goliath. 1 Samuel chapter 17. You can first notice that David was angry about what Goliath was saying. 1 Samuel 17 and verse 26, David spoke to the men who were standing by him saying, "What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God?" And then come down to verse 45 and listen to David's language here as he addresses Goliath. Then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. This day the Lord will deliver you up into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you, and I will give the dead bodies of the armies of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by the sword or by the spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." Boy, what a speech. What a powerful speech. You know, I'd have to say, David, did you just write that off the cuff? But that was his heart speaking. That was his faith, and that was his strength. He was a man of strong faith and strong will. And I'll tell you, what that reality eliminates another possible explanation for why these stories came out so differently. You can't explain David's failure by saying that he was spiritually weak, while Joseph was a man of great spiritual strength. They both were very strong. And I think once again we find another important lesson there, that not only do the strong face temptation, but they cave at times. That the strong will face temptation and the strong can give in. In fact, sometimes it's when we are strong that we can become most vulnerable. It's when we think we're above being taken, that we think that we're maybe immune, or maybe I can go and do this and I can involve myself with these things or with these people and it won't impact me. And we can't let our guard down. And I'll tell you something else that's similar about them, is that they both face similar temptation. Both were tempted to become involved in an illicit sexual relationship. And we cannot dismiss David's failure by arguing that his temptation was greater than Joseph. Matter of fact, it was probably just the opposite. We could argue that one was really in a more difficult spot than the other. I'll tell you, Joseph really was. And yet he was the one who did the right thing. Sometimes we try to explain away our failure at the moment of temptation by saying the temptation was just too much. It was just more than what I could handle. I tell you, when we do that, you need to understand that when we say the temptation was just too much, we indict God. We indict God. You know this passage, but let's read it together. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 13. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 13. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 13, he says, "No temptation has overtaken you, but as such is common to man. And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will provide the way of escape also, so that you will be able to endure it." And what does he say? He says God's going to always provide a way out. And when we say, "Well, there wasn't a way out," well, we indict God and say, you're not faithful. You didn't keep your promise. God does not permit temptation to be greater than what we're able to handle. And consequently, when we give in, that's our choice. We cannot claim the temptation was just too great. And I'll tell you, there's something else that was similar to these men, is that both were initially innocent. There is certainly no indication that Joseph invited the advancement of Potiphar's wife. There's nothing to suggest that here. Matter of fact, what we see in Genesis chapter 39 is that he resisted day after day after day. You would think after a while that Potiphar's wife would have said, "Well, obviously he's just not interested." But instead, day after day after day, she persists and he persists. And I'll tell you, he was innocent in every way. But I'll tell you, David was initially innocent too. There's no indication that David was looking for his trouble when he went out on that rooftop. Some would like to say that David did something wrong there. But all David did was go out on the rooftop. He was taking in the night air, you might say. And to glimpse at Bathsheba bathing wasn't necessarily sinful in itself. Sometimes you've ever heard the phrase, a bird's going to fly over your head, you just don't let it nest in your hair. And I think the fact is, sometimes sights are in front of us, and we can't help that. All we can do is make the choice not to pursue that temptation. David was innocent. To cast doubt over David's behavior that the scripture does not mention robs this story of a very powerful application, that here you have two men completely innocent in their conduct, yet because of their circumstances, they find themselves suddenly in tempting situations that could seriously have potential consequences. And I'll tell you, there's some lessons from that. We need to keep our guard up. We never know when we will suddenly be thrown into a tempting situation that we have to quickly make a decision that may have some very serious consequences. And when those moments come, we have to hold fast to our convictions, even when it's hard. Tell you, one momentary lapse of reason devastated David's life. You think about all that followed in David's life after this. The loss of a child, the upsetting of a kingdom. His kingdom turned into turmoil. And his life from that point on was constantly stressed. We need to take that dreadful possibility to heart when faced in these sort of situations. Both men had a way out. And that's the last similarity we want to look at, is that both were spiritual men and both were spiritually strong men, and both were tempted in the same way, and both were innocent initially in the temptation. In other words, they didn't go looking for it. And both had a way out. I'll tell you, Joseph's options were pretty limited. It wasn't like Joseph could say, "Hey, Potiphar, I quit, I resign, I'm going to go find someone else to work for." No, he was a slave. He was under the indenture of Potiphar. And the only option he had in this situation was to run, was to flee, absolutely flee. But he used that. He used that way of escape. No matter what the consequences might have been, he chose to run. David had a lot more options. All along this road to disaster, David had the opportunity to stop the train wreck. I mean, you think about it. He's up on the roof. He looks down, he sees Bathsheba, he could have looked away and walked away. But instead he looks longer, which is really where everything started. And he could have stopped right there, but instead he inquires. "Who is this woman?" And the servants say, "Well, that is Bathsheba, Uriah's wife." I wonder if they stress that. David, let's not make any mistake. She's married. And after learning she was married, he could have walked away. But instead, he said, "Bring her to me." And even then, he could have walked away. At every opportunity, David could have chosen to choose the way of escape, and he chose to reject it. And we need to understand that as well. Like these men, we always have a way out. That way is not always easy. It's not always easy. It wasn't easy for Joseph to say no. And it might not have been easy for David necessarily to say no at the beginning. But the opportunity was there. The way of escape was provided. And what that means is that when we cave to temptation, it's not because the temptation was too great. It wasn't because it was just too much we could handle, for us to handle. It's because we reject the way out that God has provided. And so you look at this situation these two men are in. Very similar situations. Very spiritual men. Very spiritually strong men. Very similar temptation. Both were initially innocent. Both had a way out. And you look at all that and you should say, well, the story ought to end the same. But it doesn't. And that's the human factor of it. Is that God has given us choices. To choose to resist temptation or to choose to give in to it. And that's where we take another look at these. Each man responded to his crisis in a different way. We notice in Genesis chapter 39 that Joseph ran away. He removed himself from the situation. He didn't allow himself to remain in a setting where the opportunity to sin remained. And Joseph understood that he needed to flee. It's interesting sometimes when we look at the New Testament and we see, especially Paul, when he writes in 1 Corinthians chapter 6 or in 2 Timothy chapter 2, when he says, flee from temptation, flee from idolatry, flee from sexual immorality. It's just interesting to me that Paul keeps it that simple, that sometimes you literally have to run away. You walk away. And you leave behind everything that's going to keep you there. Have you ever thought it interesting that David left his coat behind? You know why that was the case? Well, Potiphar's wife ripped it off of him. What that means is that Joseph never took it off in the first place. Joseph had no inkling of even thinking about giving in to this woman. And when it came time to flee, it didn't matter what he had to leave behind to get out of the situation. And we've got to do that. When temptation comes, whether it be sexual immorality or whether it be something else, we've got to flee and leave it behind. No matter how valuable, no matter how important, no matter how significant we may think, we've got to leave it behind. David, on the other hand, chose to stay. And what followed that decision of staying was a series of seemingly small steps that led to disaster. It started with his mind looking and then lusting and then inquiry. There was nothing wrong with asking for a name. There was nothing wrong with getting her number. But what it led to was adultery, and then cover up, and then murder. And what we must realize is that David's problem did not begin on a battlefield in Rabbah or in a bedroom in the palace. His problems began on a rooftop in Jerusalem simply because he chose to stay and not flee. We need to carefully examine how we manage our moments of crisis, our moments of temptation. Sometimes our path to destructive behavior begins with the simple choice to stick around. We don't remove ourselves from the tempting situation. Instead, we stick around, lurk on the edges until we're drawn in. Sometimes it's young people who choose to be with the wrong friends. Sometimes it's adults who choose to stay around the wrong coworkers. But we choose the wrong people and we make the wrong choices. And we think to ourselves, I can handle it. And it's clear we cannot. It's interesting to me, and I've mentioned this before, that in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, when Paul there is talking about the resurrection, and to some people who had once believed in that, but now were questioning the resurrection, that he says to them, listen, you're going to raise from the dead because Christ raised from the dead. And you have to ask yourself, what caused these people to stop believing in that? And 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33 tells us, do not be deceived, bad company corrupts good morals. And I remember thinking a long time ago when I was younger, why did Paul put that in this passage? And it's pretty simple. Because these people were beginning to hang around people who didn't believe in the resurrection. And after a while, when we begin to immerse ourselves into among people that don't believe the way we believe, we begin to adopt what they believe, and then we begin to adopt how they live instead of fleeing. David could have walked away, and he chose not to. And we may be put in the same situation, maybe at school, maybe at work, maybe at friends, in which we need to say, no, and run. If we want to win our battles with temptation and avoid the catastrophic consequences that come with sin, we've got to learn to run away. What we do at that moment of crisis is critical. And so there's some powerful lessons between these two stories. We may be spiritual people. That doesn't mean we're immune to salvation. We may be spiritually strong people. It doesn't mean that we should immerse ourselves in spiritual temptation. It may be that temptation is very strong. That doesn't mean that God hasn't given us a way of getting out. But we also need to remember that when we choose to sin, it's just that, it's a choice. It's a choice not to follow God and a choice to follow ourselves. It's a choice to follow Satan and sin. And sin is always that. Sin is always us making a choice between God and between Satan. And asking ourselves, who do we have greater faith in? The God who provides salvation or Satan who provides immediate gratification? It's always a choice of faith. And for you and me, the choice needs to be flee. Flee from Satan. Run to God. And embrace all that God has for you. This morning you have a choice. You have a choice to serve Him. And He's provided you that choice. He's provided you that choice out of His love. That's the beautiful thing about God, is that God didn't create us in a way in which we didn't have choice. He gave us choice. And sometimes people question that. Why would God give us the choice to sin? Matter of fact, some even question, why would God even allow sin? Well, sin is not a product of God. Sin is a product of choice. God has provided us a means by which we can be like Him and serve Him and follow Him. And out of His love, He's given us the opportunity to choose Him or choose our own way. Choice comes out of His love. And our love is shown to Him out of our choice. And so what will you choose today? Will you choose to follow Him? Will you choose to live for Him? Or you choose yourself. If we can help you in some way in making that choice to serve God this morning, we invite you to come while we stand and while we sing.
There's a great day coming, a great day coming, there's a great day coming by and by, when the saints and the sinners shall be parted right and left. Are you ready for that day to
Lord, thank you for a good lesson, for reminding us we do have choices.